and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today, Wednesday, April 25th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. We can do it together. Just visit norml.org. Today's Audio Stash is going to be all about vaporizers and vaporization. There's a number of new studies out this week regarding vaporization being a safe and effective cannabis delivery system. Really, the best way to get the most amount of THC from marijuana into a human being. That is what we're going to talk about here today. First up today is news from Normal. Yesterday, here on the Audio Stash, we spoke with Bernie Ellis about his legal cases that stemmed from growing medical marijuana on his Tennessee farm. We had actually conducted that interview late last week. It turns out Bernie was arrested yesterday by Tennessee law enforcement and placed into lockdown. Bernie was serving a term in a halfway house and had only a few weeks remaining before he would be free of his sentencing obligations. Tonight, there's a benefit concert in Nashville to help save his farm from a property forfeiture action taken in relation to his case. The concert will go ahead as planned tonight, and we hope there will be an even bigger turnout of support for Bernie because of these recent developments. Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of Normal, is in Nashville today to MC that concert event tonight, and also to help Bernie with his arrest. We had a chance to catch up with Alan just a few hours ago. Alan, thank you for taking time to join us here on this very busy day to talk about what's happening there in Nashville. First, tell us about Bernie's arrest.
Quite tragically, because Bernie has raised his profile so high and been on the front page of the Tennessean, a major paper for pretty much the entire state, if you will. He's a major piece, if not the front piece, front page today of the Nashville Scene, which is their city paper, and he's had a lot of other major articles written about him in the last couple of weeks. And so with that, the judge that is overseeing his case has taken him out of his halfway house and placed him under lockdown such that he cannot participate in the activities, including a debate today at Vanderbilt University, his alma mater, and which I'm attending in his absence, and tonight's actual benefit, which ironically is called Save Bernie's Farm, and he will not be there tonight to help promote what is looks like a very large and responsive crowd to what's been going on with Bernie's plight. So he, right now, is in lockdown.
This is almost unbelievable, Alan, that this is happening to Bernie today. What are his prospects here? How long could he remain in lockdown?
Well, this is really kind of scary. If I'm not incorrect, he's only about 15 days out from being done with his halfway house experience and, for all intent and purposes, out of the criminal justice system that he's really been laboring under for the better part of 3 years and 18 months in this halfway house experience. If he is found in any violation, substantive violation, he could be immediately sent back to jail proper and certainly have his halfway house experience extended by many days to weeks. So that's one aspect of it. But what we found out in the interim here is that, you know, the judge has really been upset by his high profile, and I think what is just so galling is the idea that the judge is upset with Bernie's, what I thought was pretty mild criticism of the judge's attitudes and the punishments he's meted out to Bernie. That he just, in that mild criticism, took such umbrage with him that that's one of the reasons why Bernie is in lockdown, is because he essentially criticized the judge. And so what does the judge do? He puts him in lockdown. So I know what my rhetorical lines are going to be today.
This is just so sad and astounding, Alan. I mean, could this really backfire for the judge, though, here? Jailing Bernie the day before his benefit concert, that could really serve to raise his profile even further.
I think it is going to. I mean, I've already been very busy talking to a lot of folks who have already covered Bernie's case, and I'm hoping to talk to the columnist from the Tribune News Services that wrote a big piece on him a few weeks ago to apprise them of what's going on. And yes, this is certainly just another chapter in the saga of a one Bernard Ellis.
Alan, we know that tens of millions of Americans every day smoke marijuana, and perhaps tens of thousands are cultivating it. But, you know, we're seeing the government really come down overly harsh on anyone who speaks out for marijuana reform in high-profile manners, like Ed Rosenthal and Mark Emery and the like.
Well, yes, it is. And there are many sad examples that are starting to arise. Ed Rosenthal, Angel Rage, Ed Forcion. I mean, you can think of many examples where once a medical marijuana patient takes a high profile, the government and certainly the prosecutors often behind the case really get agitated and somehow forget that these individuals also have First Amendment rights to express what is going on, to tell their story in real time, and to take them out of the flow of information and to be working in concert with people outside of jail cells. Oh, this is just unbelievable. So, yes, it really enforces, if not makes clear, why normal exists, why people like myself do what we do. It just makes no sense at all to see what is being done to Bernie at this point of his experience in the criminal justice system, simply for growing a little bit of marijuana for his medical need and giving it away to patients in an altruistic manner.
Alan, you're there in Nashville today. I know you're helping work on this situation. What's being done to help Bernie right now?
Yeah, there are lawyers working on it. The PR side of it's being worked. His friends are you know, trying to, you know, impress upon the judge why it would be beneficial to everybody to let him come out and to not be what appears to be petty and vindictive. Certainly not a good style for a judge. And again, Bernie, I believe, held himself out as such a gentleman throughout this process. He has been so humble, so respectful to the system. I think when the reporter asked him about his views on the judge, and he gave his opinion that he should not be punished for such.
Well, Alan, thank you for taking time on this very busy day there in Nashville to fill us in on everything that's going on.
Well, we'll try, and I'd like to say Bernie's farm, but I think today we need to say Bernie.
Indeed. Thank you again, Alan. Alan St. Pierre is Normal's executive director. He's in Nashville today to MC a benefit concert tonight for Bernie Ellis. Bernie was arrested and put in a lockdown yesterday for speaking out about marijuana reform, and he appeared here on the Audio Stash yesterday. More information about the concert and Bernie Ellis is available at SaveBernie'sFarm.com.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Each Wednesday, we get the chance to speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our regular Cannabis Science segment. Mitch is professor of psychology at State University of New York, author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book Pot Politics. We have links to those books at normalaudiostash.com. Mitch, welcome back to the Stash today.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris.
Always great to speak with you, Mitch, and today we're going to highlight some of your own research published this week in the Harm Reduction Journal. The report is entitled Decreased Respiratory Symptoms in Cannabis Users Who Vaporize. So first, let me ask what made you want to look into this question.
Well, as many of your listeners obviously know, the vaporizer heats cannabis to the point where the cannabinoids come out in a fine mist, but the plant never actually catches fire. And so that seems like there's such a wonderful potential here to decrease any respiratory symptoms that might be related to heavy cannabis smoking. I have seen lots and lots of papers, including some others that we've talked about before, showing that this has this potential, but we've never actually seen anybody report on their respiratory symptoms who used a vaporizer. So in this study, we had, you know, a very large sample of internet users, and over 150 folks who said they vaporized as their primary method of using cannabis. And those folks were basically 60% less likely to report any kind of respiratory symptoms than folks who smoked comparable amounts but didn't seem to use the vaporizer.
Now, we do hear this respiratory problem argument used a lot in opponents to medical marijuana. They say, you know, people with medical conditions shouldn't be smoking anything and that smoking cannabis could cause other problems.
I mean, that argument is so laughable to somebody who's suffering from AIDS-related wasting or, you know, cancer, chemotherapy-related nausea. I mean, they've got to find the idea of having a cough pretty mild compared to the symptoms they're already experiencing. But now that we do have some data to suggest that the vaporizer will sidestep any of these problems, I feel like that argument against medical use has got to take a dive. I think if people are going to lean on this notion that some cancer patient should worry about getting a cough or a little bit of wheezing, they're going to have to respond to the argument that now we have a new technique for administering cannabis that doesn't create any of those effects. So on to your next argument, please.
And Mitch, what would be the advantage to vaporization as opposed to another smokeless delivery system eating cannabis?
Well, as we found with some of the Marinol research, it just takes a long time for any oral administered drug to have its effects. So it's got to go down in your stomach and get digested in the intestine and broken down by the liver and all this stuff, whereas an inhaled vapor can have its impact literally within seconds. Now, it seems impatient, perhaps, but if you're the one experiencing the nausea or the vomiting, you want to get rid of that as fast as you can. And so, of course, a vaporized substance, something that you can get in your system within a few seconds, is going to be a lot more desirable than something that's going to actually require that you swallow it when here you are feeling nauseated and ready to vomit anyway. Swallowing yet another thing seems a sure, cruel kind of attempt at combating some of those symptoms.
And essentially, vaporizers get more of the THC that's in the marijuana into your body. Markedly more of the THC makes it into the user as opposed to joints, pipes, or bongs. Is that right?
Depending on which vaporizer you use, in fact, you've got much better control over how much of the mist is actually generated. Because it never catches fire, there never is any smoke. And then that side stream smoke or slipstream smoke that's so typical of any ignited instrument, basically, isn't an issue. So people do report that their cannabis seems to go a little further. Don Abrams has some data in the laboratory suggesting that it's at least as good at getting THC into the system, if not a little bit better. And then his data show that people are exhaling less carbon monoxide, which is usually a good sign that they're doing less harm to any kind of respiratory function. And I'd say, you know, with his data, the data that Dale has generated, and now this study of mine, it seems we've got a pretty clear message here that the vaporizer is the way to sidestep any respiratory symptoms related to cannabis use.
Now, also, Mitch, regarding this study itself, you and your colleague conducted the study online. Is the internet really becoming key to getting regular people participating in this type of research?
I'm finding that folks appreciate the anonymity of the internet on this kind of arrangement, and there's some data from Taiwan suggesting that people who take the same questionnaire in person versus on the internet, when they're on the internet, they actually report some things that are, shall we say, less socially desirable than they do, even when they're just sitting there in a relatively anonymous large room filling out questionnaires. And I'm hoping that this will be the wave of the future, in part because it just gets to the people who might be unwilling to come into the lab under other circumstances. So if I said, hey, come drive to my lab and fill out this questionnaire, maybe the people we're most concerned about as far as heavy substance use in general wouldn't be willing to do that, whereas lots and lots of folks have web access, and so they might be willing to go ahead and fill out a questionnaire online, even if they wouldn't be willing to come to the lab. The drawback, of course, is not everybody has web access, and then there may be a pretty important segment of the population who isn't going to get represented in data like this, and I, you know, mentioned that caveat in my research here, but in fact, I think, if anything, those people would probably be the ones who are perhaps more likely to benefit from a vaporizer, and the only way to find that out is to do more work.
And Mitch, there are a lot of vaporizer products out there on the market now, and they're kind of expensive. Is that expense really in these devices? Is that what's holding vaporization back from being more popular as a delivery method overall?
I have some unpublished data suggesting portability and expense are the two things that have come up most often as barriers to using a vaporizer. Folks are working on a more portable vaporizer that would be battery operated and something you could actually carry around. The problem with the expense is definitely improving. I mean, the Volcano, the Cadillac of vaporizer, so to speak, was close to $1,000 when it first came out. And I believe now, with a little shopping, you can get one in the $600 range. And some of the Vapor Brothers, Vapor Doc, those kinds of things are definitely in the $150 range now. When people are asking me about it, I say, well, you know, it's markedly cheaper than an iron lung, and we kind of have to keep that in mind. But I also just like the notion of putting a little money out towards your own health in order to sort of reaffirm this commitment that cannabis users can be very responsible in all domains and wouldn't harm their own bodies in order to enjoy this plant.
Now, because the cannabis does not combust, vaporizers are being called a smokeless delivery system. That label of smokeless, is that a good representation here?
I find that's a good way of thinking about it, and in fact, there isn't any smoke, and if there ever is, it's usually, you know, just human operator error or something like that, and it suggests you need to turn down the heating element a little bit. And I would hope that folks who, you know, aren't necessarily experienced with cannabis consumption could see that this really is the case. When you're looking at the mist coming through the transparent whip, there really is nothing to see. And when folks exhale, there's just a very light white mist. It's really not smoke at all. And it's much more comparable to the vaporization we see in, like, the treatment of asthma or something like that, where a psychoactive or an active substance just gets into the air in little particles. It's not that anything has been set to flame.
And in states that do allow medical marijuana, is the expense of these current vaporizers on the market justified in patients overall with all their medical expenses and treatment?
I would think it would be adaptive in the long run. When you think about how inexpensive cannabis is relative to other drugs, particularly anti-nausea drugs right now, which I find, you know, those are growing by leaps and bounds, and I'm a big admirer of the folks who work on the anti-nausea drugs, but right now they're just so expensive relative to what just a couple of dollars worth of cannabis could do in a day. Folks are spending between $15 and $150 for a day's worth of anti-nausea drugs, and it just seems frightening to me when this is something that, you know, $5 worth of cannabis could do for them.
You know, we spoke about this earlier, this very silly set of arguments against medical marijuana. You know, one of the most common opposition arguments is that we don't need whole plant cannabis for patients because there is Marinol or other anti-nausea prescription drugs. But as you just said, those drugs are very expensive and can put another financial burden on patients suffering from illnesses that are already expensive to treat, like cancer and HIV.
Oh my, it's just frightening. And in truth, the argument that Marinol is a reasonable substitute is really poor as well. Folks who have initial experiences with Marinol tell me it's extremely debilitating. The cognitive distortions are kind of odd, and it's just hard to moderate your dose, and you just don't have the same kind of control that you have over a brief inhalation of a vapor that you could then increase in really small doses if you wanted. Some folks will tell me there's, you know, a 5 milligram and a 10 milligram, and a 5 milligram does nothing, and a 10 milligram turns you into an idiot. I mean, that's, you know, nothing to look forward to if you're trying to stay productive in your day. I would hope that, someday there'd be insurance coverage for this sort of thing, because it would really save us all a great deal of money in the long run.
And is your research, along with that of Dale Gehringer of California Normal, who we'll speak with here in just a moment today, and that of Donald Abrams, is this the be-all and end-all of vaporizer studies, or is there still more research to be done in this area?
I actually just received some funding to ask people to switch to a vaporizer, so it's no longer correlational. I'm actually going to conduct the experiment here. But as you can imagine, I'm running through some hoops with my university ethics board right now about being able to do this in light of some paraphernalia laws in some areas. So I have to make sure I don't get busted as a paraphernalia distributor, basically.
And, you know, are these vaporization devices seen in the same way as pipes and bongs and the like?
Well, tobacco cannot be vaporized, so we don't have that same cover that you often have with hookahs and things like that. So I'm actually pointing out that there are a number of herbs that are also really interesting to vaporize, peppermint and damiana and things like that, that are actually very soothing and very interesting and taste good and are a lot of fun. And so I'm hoping that that argument will help in this sort of situation. But, boy, it sure says something when I have to climb through these hoops that prohibition has really turned into some insanity when you can't even get approval for research because of these laws.
Well, Mitch, this study really is wonderful as scientific studies go because it's frankly understandable to the layperson and easy to read. We have links to the full paper today at normalaudiostash.com, and it's a free download at the Harm Reduction Journal. Is that right?
Sure thing. It's harmreductionjournal.com, and anybody can download it, and I really appreciate the publishers and the editor for making this one of those open access things, because I feel like that's going to help it reach the people who need to read it the most.
Mitch, thank you again for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash for our regular Wednesday Cannabis Science segment. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is professor of psychology at State University of New York, author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book Pot Politics. We have links to those books at normalaudiostash.com. Next up today, we'll speak with Dale Gehringer. He's the coordinator of California Normal and has conducted a large body of scientific research regarding marijuana, including with vaporizers. You can find out more about Dale and his research at the jam-packed, information-filled website, canorml.org. We have links to it on our homepage today. Dale, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Good to be here.
Great to speak with you today, Dale. Now we're going in-depth on the Normal Weekly press release story from last week, Smokeless Cannabis Delivery System Found to Be Safe and Effective. Now, in the press release, there's this idea of higher plasma concentrations of THC for those who used vaporizers. Tell us what we're talking about here.
All they were saying was that a vaporizer appeared to be more efficient delivering THC from a given amount of cannabis than combustion did. They took the same amount of pot and they put it basically in a pipe and had people smoke it, and then they compared the amount of THC that actually got in their bloodstreams, looking at the blood, with the amount that they got when they vaporized the same amount. And the vaporization was somewhat more efficient. Just mildly so. There is a problem. It's long been known that there's a problem when you burn marijuana. For one thing, aside from the loss of all the slipstream smoke and things like that that you get, there's combustion of the THC. THC is actually degraded by combustion, turns into CBN, which is not very psychoactive. Seems to be one of the a minor advantage of vaporization is slightly increased efficiency on the delivery of the THC and the cannabis.
Now, the biggest advantages touted with vaporization is the fact that users do not inhale any combusted smoke, and in turn, no hydrocarbons or things like that. So, it sounds like this method of vaporization really is the best technique yet for THC delivery into the body.
Well, that's been the notion, basically that has been demonstrated earlier in research that we sponsored at California Normal and the MAPS using the same device that was tested by Dr. Abrams, the vaporizer, and a couple of other devices we tested also in previous work in a lab that in Massachusetts. that was expertise in studying smoke. But basically what we had found in earlier work was when you analyze the vapor that came off of the volcano vaporizer, literally hundreds of hydrocarbon byproducts of combustion were suppressed when you vaporized as opposed to smoking. In fact, when under vaporization, we found that basically there were only like half a dozen compounds that actually got into the vapor, most of which were cannabinoids. There were a couple of unidentified components, although one of which was not unidentified, one of which was a terpene. The terpenes are the chemicals that give the odor to marijuana. And by the way, there's increasing evidence that the terpenes have medical activity of their own, and that the differences between different kinds of marijuana may in many cases be due to differences in these terpenes. There's many terpenes, and they really have not been investigated that well. But the vaporizer seemed to deliver the THC and the terpenes and pretty much nothing else, whereas when you smoked it, you got just hundreds of other chemicals that were all combustion byproducts and presumably toxic to the respiratory system.
And is it just because this technique is so relatively new that more folks aren't using this delivery method every day?
Well, there's still development work to be done. A portable vaporizer has been, I think, the holy grail here. Most of these, you know, you need to plug them into the wall to get the electricity to run the heat. There are actually a couple of portable models that I have seen that look like they work. The problem with the ones that I have seen is that they don't have very good capacity, and you have to grind up the cannabis very finely into almost, and actually you use kief or something like that, which takes quite a bit of prior preparation, so it's not the easiest thing to use. But I expect there to be more work done on this and more innovation on coming up with a good, cheap, portable vaporizer. There's actually a bunch of cheap portable vaporizers that may not be so good and effective, though. That in fact, you've seen, you can find at a lot of head shops and elsewhere. There are these glassware products, which purport to protect the marijuana from combustion. They're designed in such a way that you put the marijuana in this glass or some metal container or some other kind of container, which you heat from the outside with a match, and hopefully you don't heat it too hot that it burns, and you heat it enough that it produces vapor, and then you can inhale the vapor. But they don't have very good heat control. It basically works on, you know, your own exposure of the sample to the heat yourself. So they're a rough approximation of vaporizers, but not nearly as dependable as what, you know, were being tested by Dr. Abrams and ourselves, the volcano device.
And is that volcano vaporizer used in these scientific studies because it's essentially a fully automatic
and
system?
It also has one feature that's very helpful is that it has a collection balloon. The vapor goes into a balloon of a given volume, so you don't lose anything into the air, and the entire sample you can replicate the dose every time because a balloon has the same volume, and this is very good for medical studies, and that's why Dr. Abrams is hoping to use the vaporizer in future medical marijuana studies that are going on at the California Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research. We think that vaporized marijuana will displace smoked marijuana as the standard for medical marijuana research.
And when people do use a vaporizer, they also get other cannabinoids as well as THC, is that right?
Yeah, but there aren't too many other cannabinoids in marijuana, actually. The tests we've done on that in the past have shown very, very low levels of cannabidiol or anything else in most marijuana. Most marijuana seems to be grown for the THC, and we suspect that the variation that people note is actually due to variations in these terpenes, the odorific compounds that have not been investigated very well.
Huh, that is very interesting, Dale. You know, Ed Rosenthal mentioned the flavonoids and terpenes last week in his interview here as well. So when the vaporizer is used, the flavors and scents are still in that vaporized mist.
No, most of the flavor of marijuana does come from these terpene things, and the terpenes are in the resin, which does get vaporized. It's sort of curious because there's also lots of terpenes in hemp. If you walk through a hemp field, in fact, you could swear you were in a marijuana field from the smell, but then there's no THC in the product. Perhaps there is some slight medicinal benefit from the terpenes in the hemp, but I don't think anybody has tried to explore that.
Now, we've been talking about vaporizers in terms of medical marijuana, Dale, but could this really be the way of the future for cannabis consumption in general here?
It's becoming increasingly common. I do know some recreational users who only vaporize, although, you know, there's still a ways to go on the convenience and cost. So it's a small but growing minority of users. It's making much more progress on the medical scene, partly with some official encouragement out here. We have a real problem because of the anti-smoking laws. It's very hard to have on-site consumption for medical patients anywhere. However, vaporization slides under the bar of smoking. It does not count as smoking, and we've gotten exemptions. And there are some cities and counties that have ordinances specifically disallowing any on-site smoking, for example, at cannabis clubs, but that allow for vaporization quite explicitly. In general, these vaporizers just do not set off smoke alarms the way pot smoking will. That's been another advantage in setup. So there's a push now for the dispensaries to have the vaporizers, and of course, in fact, there's some dispensaries out here that refer to themselves as vapor rooms or whatnot. And then the economic problem of paying for it is not such an issue because the patients can come in and use it there on the premises. It's sort of like a hookah parlor.
And because these vaporizers are so efficient, would it then, I have to ask this question, would it make marijuana last longer? I mean, let users smoke less actual material for the same effect?
Yeah, presumably so. I don't know how much advantage there is there. I don't think we really have very good numbers on that. Presumably there would be some improved performance in that regard. Usually you only get about 25% of the THC in the pot that you've got. If you roll a joint or smoke a pipe, about 75% of the THC just never gets into you. A lot of it actually gets exhaled, too. That's you know, you inhale a pot and then you exhale, and about half of it gets exhaled from what I've been able to determine.
Dale, this has been another fascinating conversation here today. I really do appreciate you taking time to speak with us about vaporization today.
Okay, and anybody looking for information on the vaporizer studies, we have that listed under health information on our website at California Normal, canormal.org, canorml.org.
Righto. Thank you again very much, Dale. Dale Gerringer is the coordinator for California Normal. As he mentioned, you can visit their fact-filled website at canorml.org. And we have links to it on our homepage today. listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.